revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I have one of my favorite people on, somebody who I love discussing topics with because she's a thoughtful person, God-fearing, and ultimately just committed to sharing what she knows with humanity. And that's exactly the person that I love interviewing. So today we're going to speak with Miss Lynn Taylor. And today we're going to have a little different conversation. We talk about school a lot, but I want to talk about our healthcare system and new paradigm of delivery of healthcare. We all know about the insurance model where it's one size fits all. It is corporate driven, and it's really not about health at this point. It's about money, in my opinion, and about people being pushed into a silo of this is all you have, take it or leave it, like it or lump it. And I don't think we need to be in that situation any more than parents need to be in the situation with their kids. So we're talking with the Common Core Diva, Miss Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, I want to again welcome you back to the show because as usual, you have your ear to the ground and you know things that are, you know, you're forward thinking. And I think to have people know what's coming and what's available is key. So thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you so much. And as always, I am so thrilled to not only be able to talk with you, but share with your audience. Because, you know, I have not been able to meet anyone in your audience, but I really think from the topics that you cover, they've got to be one smart bunch of people.
I agree with you. Smart, savvy, and just wonderful. So I want to thank my listening audience as well. So today we're going to talk about a new healthcare system. You know, we know about the insurance. What else is out there? What have you learned that people need to know about?
Well, there are new systems that are coming along. Your existing workplace insurance programs going, oh, well, you're not going to pay more for my service. I'm just going to come along as a freebie. Well, here's a warning. Nothing we receive from work or the government is ever truly free. There will be a cost somewhere, somehow, some way. So when I say this, please don't miss that, okay? So, for example, like I said, there are established workplace insurance programs. We have some companies that are big enough, they have insurance that they have a policy with. That they are known as self-insured. That means they have a large number of employees and they have enough that they can just go in and talk to big insurance and say, well, you know, we want our own policy for exclusive to our company. And then you have other companies, not quite so big, who they have a policy with to cover their employees. Well, now we're seeing these new buddy systems, and that's what I'm going to call them, a buddy system, that will come along your workplace insurance and go, oh, well, guess what? At no extra charge, you can have access to all these other services that you can't get through your other workplace insurance. Mm. Now, in the day and age that we're in, that sounds fantastic, does it not?
It does.
It really, truly does. I mean, when I first heard of this, I'm like, okay. But with anything that sounds too good to be true, guess what it is?
Too good to be true.
Right, because the way these buddy systems are working is they're coming up with this thing of, well, you know, your regular insurance or maybe your health savings account won't cover this, but we'll cover it. And again, no extra charge. Well, no extra charge. But here's what happens. They use algorithms and AI-driven technology to determine what services will work for you, not you picking out what service works for you. Then the other caveat to this is, well, you will be paying for that service, but it won't be an inflated price. For example, you know, there's a huge argument in the nation over the fact of, well, you have people with diabetes and insulin is off the chart. But if they go to, you know, this other company or this other country, they can get their medications for a fraction.
Right.
Well, this AI-driven, algorithm-driven buddy system is going, okay, we're going to not charge you an arm and leg for this service or this prescription. Where's the money coming from? It's coming from people who fund the buddy system. So are they insurance qualified or are they big business? You have to stop and look.
So are these the money coming from the company? Is it coming from some sort of pathway that's allied with insurance? Who's paying? Who's funding this?
From what I understand, and again, I don't know everything about this kind of buddy system, okay? Because it's still so new that not a lot of people understand it, even the people who are offering it, which should give you a warning. If the people who are offering this don't even really understand how the system is working so that they can explain it to you and it makes sense, that would be something I would go, wait a minute, do I really want to get involved with this?
Mm-hmm. And is it, like you talked about the employer funding, mm-hmm. and that's something called an ERISA plan for those people who don't know. And
okay.
The employer will contract with an insurance company,
okay.
pay the insurance company to be the administrator, mm-hmm. and then the insurance company doles out the money to the doctor, the hospital, or whatever. But that pathway is different than the typical insurance model. Let's say
okay.
they cover you to have an appendectomy or a tonsillectomy, for example.
Okay.
There's, if the insurer is working with the employer, they can have carve-outs. So they can have black holes where you're not covered for a typical procedure or CT, mm-hmm. or worse yet, you as a provider, I should say, a physician, you'll get a pre-certification and then they'll tell you it's great, you're covered, and then you do the procedure and they deny it. But you have no recourse if they deny it. You cannot go to the Department of Labor. You cannot go to the insurance commissioner. This is a separate private entity that mm-hmm. you've inadvertently stepped into. So they can just deny it and you're hosed. They'll never
yeah.
pay you. And
fine.
That goes on a lot. So I don't know if this system is similar to that where they tell you they're going to cover it. Or better yet, they don't cover it at all, even though it's maybe it's a chemo treatment.
Well, here's the thing. You just said it was a black hole. From
mm-hmm.
what I understand, these buddy systems are supposed to be the solution for the black hole.
I see.
So that if your regular insurance doesn't cover that CT scan,
mm-hmm.
then this buddy system will. And again, who wouldn't want that? Because, you know, healthcare costs are horrible. We know the healthcare system is broken, but is this a real solution? It's too soon to tell, but why are we so already depending on AI to generate what works for us?
I agree. So my question is, AI is driven by data. So how much information as the person who's covered, quote unquote, how much information of themselves do they have to give up in order for this algorithm to work?
You know, I don't know, because it buddies up to their existing policy. Maybe that information is instantaneously farmed out without the person knowing, which would cause concern as well.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, it does. Whatever you put in the electronic medical record can be accessed by the insurance company, by the government, especially if you have a policy like the Affordable Care Act, where you have to, the government sifts through all of that. And I should say every alphabet agency, quite frankly, sifts through that. So it's not private. Whatever that doctor puts in the EMR, the electronic medical record, is potentially shared.
Right. And the thing about these buddy systems is that they are funded by public-private partnerships. So again, here we go. Government partnering with private corporations and big business. And is that really who we want in charge of our healthcare?
No. And in my opinion, that should be between the doctor and the patient. that's long gone unless you have a self-pay setup where it's cash based on what you do with the patient.
Right, but look at how successful the public-private partnership has been in healthcare thus far. I mean, what could possibly go right or wrong?
Well, you're right, right. Nothing really goes right in that system, especially when you need it. It's great when you're paying in your premiums and you don't need it. But when something comes to the fan and you have to have coverage, there really is a question mark on whether or not it's going to be successful.
Right, absolutely. And one of the sales pitches that's used is, you won't have a deductible, you won't have any copay, and we're not going to come after you for collections because whatever we charge you is going to be the fair rock bottom price. Well, how do we know it's really a fair price? How do we know it's really rock bottom? And how can it possibly be a quality service if there's no copay or no deductible that's met? Because if you look at the way the healthcare system has happened, you know, we went from affordable copays of $10 to $40 a visit to now we have thousands upon thousands of dollars that there's no way on God's green earth we're going to hit in 1 year.
Unless something horrible happens, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And from the standpoint of, that's a one-off, right? So you're talking about whether this buddy system will pay for the service. There's a second piece to this for the person providing the service. That's not a one-to-one. So you may be paying into the system, and I would assume the doctors, the hospitals, have they signed on to be part of the network of this buddy system, or is this considered to be like a self-pay a la carte?
You know, yeah, that's a question I really do not know the answer to. And, you know, if someone is familiar with this, hopefully they will get in touch with you and say, you know, hey, I have experience with this. I totally understand what's going on and how this works.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, like I said, it sounds too good to be true, especially knowing that the only type of payments they'll take are digitalized.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that is supposed to be how they are cutting the cost so that there are no collections or copays or deductibles. But we're digitalizing everything, which means we're going to be putting all our information on the blockchain. Do we really want to go there? Because that will penalize you in the long run through AI going, well, sorry, you didn't have this enough, so you're denied.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really excellent point, and that's very subtle. So if you don't take, let's say you have an anxiety or some sort of psychological issue, and you didn't take a medication, you wanted to do it natural, you wanted to go through a separate pathway to get help. So if you don't take the medication that they expect you to have for anxiety, for example, does it make you unqualified for coverage? So it's a way to actually make sure you jump through every single hoop, every single treatment algorithm in order to be covered. And actually, it locks you in. It could potentially lock you into the system where it's medication or nothing. It doesn't exist. And that's the last thing people want, because we talked about it in the past where it should be individualized. If you want to have a holistic method of treating your illness, then you should be allowed to do that. But if there's only one pathway that's considered to be the proper delivery of healthcare, the proper procedure, the proper, medication or surgery, if you don't do that, does that put you in a position where, you don't want to do it our way, so we're not covering you? And it's just another way of capturing people who don't want to do the standard insurance model, who really want to have control over their treatment options. This has a way of to actually making it even more stringent.
Absolutely, it does. And, you know, here's the thing. I can tell you, as someone who sought alternative treatment, 9 times out of 10, I ended up having to pay out of pocket because insurance would cover anything I needed for what I was going through, as long as it was chemical medicine or synthetic medicine, and I didn't want synthetic medicine. They would have covered every single thing of it if I had chosen to do that. And there's no proof that these new buddy systems will be that lenient. You know, they'll, you know, I can't tell you the number of people I've talked to where they said, well, my HSA, my health savings account money is supposed to be able to cover anything that I deem medically necessary.
Exactly.
Whether it's a box of Band-Aids over the counter or it's a high-priced prescription that your doctor gave you, doesn't matter. But some companies with their health savings accounts limit what is available to be purchased on that HSA. And so if you don't have a pharmaceutical company that works with your HSA, you have to pay for that out of pocket. So will these buddy systems be that stand in the gap for people with unconventional needs and services? That's yet to be determined. And I think that's a crying shame, because if that could be a true stepping stone, then we might truly see something positive happen with our healthcare system.
Well, from my standpoint, for a consumer-driven healthcare system is what it used to be and what it needs to be. That's how you have competition. If it's not competition, then this system is just gathering more people into it so they can manipulate and control them. And also the costs will never drop because there's no competition. If I can't shop. I can't go to a doctor or a hospital that's going to give me a cash-based price and give me alternative treatments because I can't use my own money for it, then it's useless.
Exactly. Exactly right. And you need to look at who is behind these buddy systems. Are they true healthcare workers, or are they just bankers who are bored and need something fun to do?
Well, you know, healthcare system is a cash cow. So, you know, it doesn't have, I think they're finding that there's another pathway past the standard healthcare insurance industry, which is direct marketing technically to the patient, but you have to deliver what you promise. And that's where you're saying, we don't know. And you don't want to be in the position where you find out in a position where you're an extremist and you're kind of stuck out there. So on that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And these new insurance models, I mean, if it's anything like secondary pathway in healthcare, we're talking about Wall Street getting involved, just like they are in the housing market. And they're offering these products, potentially, that they're going to make money off of, but you'll never use it because somehow it can't apply it, which is a total scam. I mean, the insurance company works that way now. If anybody looks at their card, if they have the standard insurance model, you can see in small print that it basically says, this does not mean it's because you carry the insurance that you're going to have coverage. That is not the same. And I can't, when I'm listening online, waiting for the representative to come on, we call an insurance company. They're very clear about saying it to us too. You can get approval, but it doesn't mean we're going to pay it. And I can't tell you how many times that comes to bear. And you have to fight. And now you've got the AI part of it. And if some of the insurance companies got in trouble for producing these algorithms that were never going to treat the patient because it was just ridiculous. And people had to fight them. And they're saying, oh, it was an error. I love that. They set the parameters. All of a sudden, it's an error when it did what they wanted it to do, which is to have the patient pay the premium and never get coverage when they really need it. And there's no recourse. And when people, you know, come up in arms about it, they say they made a mistake, it's an error, or they were hacked, or whatever they're going to say to get out of the loop of and the responsibility for pain. I think it's practicing medicine without a license, in my opinion. But this is a whole different thing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, along those lines, we're seeing more and more people who, because we're using online health and we're hooked into some of these services that are available online, who's credentialing them? Are they truly licensed, or did they just go through Joe Blow's fast track, let me get a credential school and slap a degree on it so that I can go out there and charge you bookoos of money to provide you a service that I'm not truly qualified for? I mean, we don't we're not given that information. And I think that is a disgrace, because you have, especially when it comes to mental health, you have so many services that now have popped up. Oh, you don't have to live in the same state as your online person. And is your online person truly a trained and professional therapist, or did they just go take the fast track? Because we're seeing this happen with education, especially where healthcare is considered. We're fast tracking students through courses that deal with the human body. Why? You should never do that.
I agree.
Why in the world would you want to fast track someone who is going to be working on your body? Would you want your surgeon to be fast-tracked and barely know how to knit together an apple, let alone your liver?
You've got an excellent point, and I've seen now AI entering the medical education system. You know, when we were training, we had to, not to be graphic, but we had to work with cadavers for months before we saw patients. So you had to understand the anatomy of the person. You had to get your hands in there. Now this is virtual, where you're doing, you know, three-dimensional, what do you call those things? You have a headset on. You're not touching anybody. And you're right. There's a lot of fast tracking where some of these things can take 18 months or less to get a certificate. But I think we got into trouble during the whole COVID time frame, where it all became what do you call telemedicine. That's not healthcare. I don't understand how you can examine somebody virtually. I don't understand how that works. But for me, it seems to me it was a delivery system for pharmaceutical, for big pharma. People were writing prescriptions without seeing anybody.
Well, they would view your image on a computer screen, but having that one-on-one in-person visit, of course, was supposedly impossible. So we couldn't do that. But, you know, the thing of you don't have to live in the same state. Well, what if the medical licensing varies from state to state? I mean, I don't know if that happens or not. You could better speak to that.
Oh, I can. Let me say how it works now. Okay. You can get a compact license where you have a license in a state and you can be licensed in about 40 states without having to actually go and get your license individually. So there are positions now where you can do telemedicine across the country because you're licensed technically throughout the country, which I don't think is an awesome thing personally. I think healthcare is about the individual. It's about doing a physical examination. This is not what that is anymore. I don't know how you do, taking somebody with an acute illness and just seeing them online and asking them to open their mouth and looking in the camera, but there's no culture. There's no physical examination, and you're just writing a prescription. I see those people a lot, that they got telemedicine doctors. They're not better. And then they come in to the physical plant to actually see the doctor. That's not treatment, in my opinion. It's a money-making venture. So I wonder, you know, it makes me think, Lynn, our healthcare system is extremely expensive, but there's so many layers where people are spending money, but they're not better. And would we be better served if people just went to the doctor, got examined, got the proper diagnosis, and got well within 10 days, as opposed to a month of this or 6 weeks? They're still not better, but they've been spending money right along, but they're not getting what they pay for. And that's, people need to take into consideration that's a reason that the healthcare costs are not coming down.
Well, exactly right. I know one of the things that supposedly helped drive it up was malpractice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know if that's still even practice or not. But, it did help some of our costs rise. Was it an across-the-board excuse? I think it was used as one. I really do, because it was a justification that was needed. Oh, well, you know, this no longer costs you $5. Now it costs you $5,000 because Dr. So-and-so had to raise his insurance. Well, if he had to raise his insurance, then, you know, that's not my problem. I don't know. It's such a discussion that I don't know that we can solve everything or even start to address everything in the time that we have. But let's look at it this way. The questions that we're raising, maybe the audience will sit there and go, wait a minute, didn't think about that. Maybe I should look into it. So they can start doing their research because, you know, you're right. As far as the telehealth thing goes, yeah, open wide and look at the camera. Well, depending on what kind of camera you have, how true is that image? Are you really seeing something in their throat? Don't know. What if it's another body part that really shouldn't be put over the internet?
That's another point.
Is you know, being put over the internet. Don't think that all those people who are harvesting AI and using algorithms don't pick up on those things.
Oh, you've got an excellent point. And for me, it's, I understand if you're rural. I understand if you don't have access to a doctor. And that's what it should be used for. We're talking about people living in major metropolitan areas that don't see physicians, don't go to any kind of urgent care. But there's a whole system that's designed to be virtual and to just give fast care, you know, urinary tract infection or ear infection or whatever it is. But I wonder, there's no study that I've ever seen that talk about misdiagnosis. What you thought is a sore throat is actually a cancer of the throat. You know, those types of misses, which by definition you have to have breakthrough or people who fall through the cracks, because healthcare, it's not an algorithm-driven profession. It's not one size fits all. Wow. You have to think outside the box a lot of the times, and you have to actually see somebody. Not just convenience, but again, are we living in a system where everybody just wants convenience, right? If it's AI, it must be better. If it's digital, then, you know, we've been, I think, marketed to that it's better than humans, that these things can make diagnoses better.
Yeah, because they can't possibly misdiagnose you.
No.
You know what? Misdiagnosis is nothing new. I can tell you, gosh, it was probably 2000. I was living in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I got sick, and I went to a doctor, and I ended up getting misdiagnosed, and I kept getting worse and worse and worse, and come to find out, I had pneumonia, but he passed it off as something else. Well, when it finally hit the fan, I ended up staying in bed for 6 months because one doctor misdiagnosed me, and my treatment literally laid me on my back because I was so sick but didn't know it. Now, that was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely horrible. That's one example, but that was back in 2000. We are way past that. And
yeah.
We're still seeing people get misdiagnosed with UTIs, and then they're getting thrown on antibiotics. Well, you don't need to mess around with something that's a UTI, because if UTIs get misdiagnosed or mistreated, it leads to more infections of other organs, and it can lead to death if it is not properly treated in a certain amount of time.
Absolutely, you're right. I mean, kidney failure, organ failure, it's not a joke. And, you know, for the average illness, it mostly, most of them are viral. That's true.
Right.
Most of them go away by themselves. But then again, how much, let's say it's a typical cold that gets treated with all these meds that you may not need. So again, you may be paying more for a diagnosis than you need to.
Uh-huh.
That's the flip side of the misdiagnosis, that you're on the hook for all sorts of high cost medications that you didn't need. I mean, it's just, there's no thought involved. It's like the person is a cost center, and that's how they're considered. And I'm a big fan of take your time, get your history, get to know the patient, and then do the physical examination. So if a doctor is in there seeing six patients an hour, because it's like a mill. On these telemedicine calls.
Okay.
It's about volume. They got to get you in and get you out. What is that for that one person that didn't need it or was misdiagnosed? What's the cost to that person, to that family? We don't know. There's no studies that are telling us this, but it's getting bigger and it's getting more the standard, the norm. And I don't think that's a good place to be, not for someone's health.
Well, Well, here's the thing. It's not just a financial cost. It's a physical cost.
Absolutely.
And if you look at the countries with healthcare systems where you have a bona fide issue that needs attention now, and you're put on a waiting list, and you're going to hope and pray that you make it through to when that your number comes up, you can go get whatever service it is, or treatment, or surgery. Mm-hmm. We're talking about putting people back in eras that are not good.
No. And where does the buck stop? So let's take our second break, because I want to delve into the real cost. We just touched the surface of what happens when it really affects you in a way that you don't recover quickly. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, how can people reach you to see podcasts that you've been interviewed on and to view your work? Because you've done yeoman's work on so many topics. And I know that your website's a wealth of information.
Oh, well, thank you. That means so much coming from you. But you guys can find me on commoncorediva.com. That's www.commonCoreDiva.com. You can also find me on Twitter, X, at Common Core Diva. You can find me on Facebook, Common Core Diva 2023. I did have to update my Facebook page because somebody somewhere didn't like what I was posting, so they took my page down, and I said, nope, I'm putting it right back up.
I love that. No one's going to take you down for the count. You're going to find a way around and through.
I will find a way, my dear.
I love that. That's God-given, so you need to just put it out there.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, you know, one of the things that we need to also answer is not just the physical cost to yourself and your family or your loved ones, but who are these investors of these buddy companies? Are they venture capitalists? And do you know what a venture capitalist is and what they do, you know? They basically take their money and they throw it in behind somebody somewhere doing something and hope they make money. And they're going to do anything they can to make that money because it's all about their bottom line. So you really need to, when you find a buddy system that has said, oh, hey, we're here to go along your workplace insurance, you need to look. And if they're not willing to publicly disclose those people, those venture capitalist companies, you really need to start wondering, should I even use this? Because if they won't publicly disclose their investors, what else are they not telling you?
I think that's a great question to ask. And if their motivation is money, then it's not aligned with healthcare. Because you should not be a cost center if you need to have something that's natural in terms of treatment or an alternative treatment, and because it's not going to make their bottom line successful, they're going to deny you, then there's no reason to do that. And one of the things that really that people need to understand is if they are a satellite, an alignment with the insurance market, then you're still in the same position where they make money by you paying a premium and never using it. That's what people don't really think about. They don't care. You see these commercials like people dancing and they love you and they're here for you. They're not. They're here to make money and to deny you care. The whole capitation model, Kaiser version of the model where they make money if you don't come in, or they make money by giving you the cheapest healthcare so they can pocket the rest. That's not in alignment with health. It may cost more for something, but you'll get better and you'll be out of the system. That's not how it works. Or they'll manage you instead of doing something definitive because it's more money in the back end. You don't want that system. So an alternate pathway is to deal with people who are cash based. And there are, religious organizations with Christian sharing ministries. They have companies that are not aligned with any religion, but people join in as a group themselves. So the patients pay into a pot, and as a group, they get to decide what gets covered. That's a different model, and that's based in cash. So one of the things that the system is bad about is paying the people who are doing the work. This is money going to administration, to the CEOs, to everybody but the delivery of the healthcare person. That's where this, to me, needs to change. It has to be a direct relationship with the doctor, the nurse, the person delivering the care itself. And they need to be compensated, not be aced out to their delivering the service, but they're being, you know, how can I put it? Their value is being diminished. Like they're just there just so they can say they have a coverage, but in actuality, they're being screwed over.
Right, but we see our government do that to us on different levels. I just was watching a documentary today. It's about a tragedy that happened over in the United Kingdom back in 2017. And this entire apartment building went up in flames, and 72 people died of all ages, and over almost 100 were injured because the government wanted to cut corners. But my point is the same, is when they start putting the profit over the people, which they did in this case, and they're doing with us in healthcare, that changes the narrative from what medicine and healthcare was supposed to do, which was do no harm, into, well, we just don't give a rat's bottom. What's wrong with you? We're going to go in and we're going to get our share, and the heck with you.
That's a good point. I mean, there's no recourse. That's where it gets to be extremely maddening, especially for the doctor or the nurse who's providing the care, and they know what needs to get done, but they have to go through various tiers of denials and resubmissions. And every time you resubmit for an appeal, it's another 30 to 45 days. That's the patient not getting care in that interim while you're running up the chain so they can ultimately deny you. And that's where those ERISA plans become extremely toxic, because when they say no, you can't go to anybody to work around them. It's a no, a hard no.
And oh my goodness.
It's awful.
Well, you know, I wish there was as much enthusiasm in the healthcare system to correct these problems as there was when we saw the OxyContin nightmare happen, because you had healthcare providers going in and creating fake patients just to write prescriptions so that they could dole it out to those patients who they had gotten addicted.
Yeah.
Or they were feeding their own habits. If we had that much fervor over correcting what's wrong as we do into continuing to excuse my French, bastardize the healthcare system, we'd be a heck of a lot better off.
I agree. And I think we'd have a lot more money as a patient in their pocket, as opposed to what they're doing now. So we have people paying thousands per month in premiums and not getting their money's worth, or the cost shifting that happened, where you were right. Initially, it was $5 copay, $10 copay, no problem for the patient. Now the cost has shifted, so their out-of-pocket can be, I had a patient with $10,000 deductible. That means they're paying a premium and they have to pay for every single dollar until they reach $10,000, and then the insurance kicks in. Why are you covering, why are you paying for that? It's not healthcare. Right. You're just giving money to the insurance
company.
It really
isn't. No. And you know, the thing that gets me is, oh yeah, insurance will come in and they'll start paying a portion. And then when you reach this level, well, they'll pay a little more.
Right.
And oh my goodness, if you get to this level, well, ding, 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 you're a winner, because they're going to cover 100%. But look at what you have to go through
a lot
physically and financially to get to that point.
It's true. And
it's not a lottery system, but that's what they're treating it as.
You know, in a lottery, you may win some money with that. This, you're not winning at all, from the standpoint of putting money in, expecting to get coverage. That's a promise, right? You sign a contract with them. I think they breach it when they decide they're not going to cover this medication because it's not on their formulary, or you have to go to this pharmacy because they're in bed and getting a kickback from it. There's so much graft in the system. And there's no legal they don't have any legal ramification. When they deny the care and they're saying it's an experimental, when the, let's say for ENT, we have a body, everybody does. The internal medicine doctors have one. They have a standard of care that the various specialties say, you know, if you have a sinus infection, you treat with this many rounds of antibiotics before you get a CT scan, for example. They totally ignore that and they just deny it. So again, as I said before, they're practicing medicine without a license, without any complication. And I think if they were held to the same standard as doctors were, that they could be sued for denying care for practicing medicine, maybe this would stop. But I think there's so much money and there's so much backhand, you know, glide handling, backslapping that goes on. The only thing that people have in their pocket now is to be a consumer. Go out of that system. Do something like Aflac, where you get a coverage, you're paying for an indemnity policy. If you get, God forbid, diagnosed with cancer, they give you $250,000 to do with what you want to. If you want to leave the country, if you want to have experimental, they give you a check and you're not asking for someone to help you and hope for the best. And it's a fraction because most people are healthy. And that pot is not accessed like it is in a regular healthcare system. And their job is to pay out. That's what they do. So we have plenty of options. I just don't think people know about it.
And I think you're exactly right. And I think it's been a while since we've brought these solutions up, because I know that there were past shows where you did explain how these, that there were alternatives and that there are networks of doctors out there like yourself who are able to practice but not have to be tied into all the hoops that other physicians are. You know, another thing you need to be thinking about as far as these buddy systems, are they working just with big business and big pharma and big insurance, or are they working with governments? And if so, at what levels? Is it a state? Is it a local? Is it Medicaid, Medicare? Is it the IDEA funding that would be used in schools? You have to look what parts of the government are they also being able to work with. And the reason why is because, again, the analytics, the innovation, the data platformings, we know that innovation is a code word for more data mining on us about every aspect of our lives and how the data can somehow, you know, drive this or drive that. Again, these are other questions you need to ask if you find that you're being offered a buddy system.
Agreed. And sometimes it's, you know, handling your business yourself may be the option, especially if you're young and healthy, where you save your money, get one of these indemnity policies and actually have your own medical pot that you can draw from, and then become a consumer where you go to people like American Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, where they have a whole list of doctors across the country who were self-pay or will make a deal with you through a primary care group that you pay once a month, but you're covered for everything. For families, like maybe $150 a month, but you can go in and get your CT, if you have a cold or if you have a flu or if you have a pneumonia, they're going to be able to treat you without the, I have to get approval from somebody. Right. So it's personal responsibility on a different level. And I think we've been, again, marketed to that it's so expensive. You need help. You can't do it on your own. You need to have insurance. It's this drone of you won't have healthcare unless you have health insurance. That's how we got into trouble with the Affordable Care Act. Because I said it before, and I'll say it 1,000 times, having health insurance does not mean access to healthcare. It just means you're paying somebody to lock you out most of the time.
And that's that. I don't understand why that is not considered criminal. Because if we did that to each other, we would be under the jail in 2 seconds.
It's true, but there's no recourse, unfortunately. So on that note, let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We speak with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And I wanted to ask you, what is the STEAM agenda from the United Nations? I've never heard of that.
Okay. STEAM, which stands for science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math, is a cousin to the STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. There's also one that the Catholics started, which is called STREAM, which stands for science, technology, reading, writing. Engineering, the arts, and math. So basically the agenda is we're going to take every conceivable subject or aspect of healthcare, since we're talking healthcare here. We're going to take every part of the education-related platforms for healthcare, and we're going to align it to any one of those acronyms that you have out there. And the reason why that is so dangerous is because, again, when you look at the roots of where these systems came from, it's not American. It's not based on American attitudes, values, or beliefs. It's not based in the American Constitution or the American Bill of Rights or any of our other laws that are out there that are meant to serve us, like the Civil Rights Act of 1981, Section 1983, which tells us anybody who messes with our God-given rights or the rights that our government is supposed to be protecting for us, there's recourse. There is absolute recourse. And, you know, the beauty of that particular section goes into, there's no age limit, there's no limit on which entity could be held accountable, but it gives recourse. And so I think that's an effective solution. But why the STEM, whatever agenda is so toxic is because it's based on globalism. And when you look at the global data partners who are tied into this, especially through healthcare, you have to wonder, okay, is my data staying stateside? Or is it going somewhere that I don't know about? If so, what parts of my data? If so, is this under international benchmarks? Is this under the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals? Well, of course it is. It absolutely is. Because if you look at Sustainable Development Goal number 3, it's healthcare for all, which equates into universal healthcare. All treated as we all have the same this or that or the other. And, you know, look at the countries who've had universal health care. Again, you have to wait in line for your turn and then hope that you, first of all, live to make it to that appointment and that you can be treated. So it's not a good situation whatsoever.
It seems that the global pathway to health care is really a bigger picture than just the patient. Mm-hmm. It's about information about you that only you and your doctor should know. It's about control too, because it's not allowing you to access a system in a timely way a lot of the times, and it doesn't make it cost effective either. So it's not really, it's a control grid, honestly.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, if you look at some of these buddy systems, look at their charitable arms. What are they supporting? Are they supporting something that you really want to see supported? Because I'm going to tell you what, if you look at some of the big businesses and their philanthropic forays into culture, it might be something that you think is the neatest thing since sliced bread, or it might be something that totally is opposed to your personal value system. Mm-hmm. But hey, your money's going to it. And if your money's not going to it, the people you work for who have employed this buddy system, they're supporting it. So you have to do more than just look at the shiny postcard that you get in the mail going, oh, here you go. You have to really read between the lines, do your due diligence, look at who funds them, what governments they work with, what charities do they support. Is this something you're okay with? If not, get out of it. Don't use it.
As with everything, right? I mean, there's a bigger picture here, always. And the agenda, for me, it doesn't work in the interest of the individual and of the person. It's about supporting, constantly feeding and perpetuating this model and making it, I think, at some point, the only game in town.
Right. Well, collectivism's the name of the game, my dear.
Well, as long as we still have our voices and we're individuals, we can thwart that system. Withdraw your consent.
Right. We absolutely can, and we absolutely should. And if we're not doing that, and you hear this, and you get that little buzz in your heart going, you know what? I don't want to live like this. Then you don't have to. Come hang out with us.
Exactly. Don't. And I wanted to revisit what you said at the beginning of the show about the digital aspect of this, because I wanted to clarify for me, you're saying that potentially whatever information you give can become part of the blockchain. Is that what you mentioned initially?
Yes, absolutely it will. Because if you look at what is going into that from all the data mining, remember, from an education aspect, from a healthcare aspect, it goes into not just algorithms, it goes into biometrics, which has to do with heart rates and breathing rates and eye twitches and finger, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But biometrics goes way beyond all that kind of stuff into information that is just literally off the charts. I think the last count I knew about the data points that were harvested on our children in education was over 4,000. So I can only imagine what healthcare is.
That's pretty frightening, actually.
Yeah.
So you ending up becoming, from a biometric standpoint, you are in their system and you're not an individual. It's not like you go into some data harvesting and it's white. Yeah. You don't know who it is. You know exactly who it is, what their healthcare choices are, et cetera.
Well, it continues to turn you into a commodity to be bought and sold and traded and controlled. And that's what this is about.
People need to really take a step back. Convenience is not the end all be all. And choices that you make, they sound really, I mean, they've done a wonderful marketing job between the wearables and you want to check your heart rate and your blood pressure and all these things that are actually online. I actually got rid of one of my, an app on the Apple Watch because you actually had to confirm, in order to use it, you had to sign in such a way and say that they could use your data any way they wanted in order to use the watch. That was the wake up call for me. I'm like, I don't need the watch like that. I'm just getting rid of it.
Oh, well, you know, a good marketing ploy for Mother's Day and Father's Day was the Aura ring.
Yeah.
Because after all, you could have your breathing at night measured, and you could have your heart rate measured, and this and that and the other. And if you look at the changes, if you have someone who sleeps with sleep apnea, look at the changes that have happened to the sleep apnea machines, because they've gone from machines that didn't harvest data while you slept to that's all they do. And I'm sitting there going, okay, well, I don't use one, I don't need one, but if they can control what information is harvested, what else can they control?
It's true. And they know when you're not wearing it and then they alert the doctor. Yeah. I mean, this is precision medicine, the ground floor precision medicine. And it's about control of everything and knowing when you're not being compliant. That's not the position that any patient should want to be in.
And if they start talking about inserting things in your body to data harvest, No, you should run the other way.
I agree. Oh my gosh. Well, we've reached so many topics, but I hope makes people think that just because it's out there doesn't mean it's for you. So on that note.
Well, it may not, but don't just accept someone else's word for it.
No way. I totally agree with that. Now, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show, but I want to make sure people know how to reach you.
Okay, if you're interested in any of the research that I do, commoncorediva.com is my blog. I do have several tabs there. One is a donate button. So if you wish to financially bless any of the work that I do, which is, as Dr. Elena said, a yeoman's job, you have that opportunity. Also, you can find me on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. at Common Core Diva. I'm on Facebook too, Common Core Diva 2023. If you wish to schedule me to come speak to your group, or maybe you hear this and, oh, well, I know somebody who's got a radio show or whatever, info@commoncorediva.com is my email.
Lynn, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much. I tell you what, it's always so much fun. And, you know, the time just goes so quickly when we talk.
I know, but it's like I feel like I'm suspended in time in a good way. So I look forward to our next visit.
Okay, dear. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.